Hello everyone, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. My name's Tim Edwards, I'm the editor of PC Gamer, and joining us in the studio today, our brand new studio, is Graham.
Hello.
He's our deputy editor. He's going to be talking about SubCom 2.
I am.
Of it. Tom.
Oh.
Tom is our section editor and king of the blog right now.
Indeed.
He's going to be talking a little bit about Just Cause 2.
And the Old Republic.
And Craig.
Hello.
Craig is our news editor. Is that still your job title?
I've aged so many things in the last few months.
Don't worry about it. And he's going to be talking about Stalker. So let's go on with it. Tom, tell us about the Old Republic.
Great.
Do it now.
Okay.
So our cover, I should explain, the cover on our latest issue, which should be just with you any moment, is we've done the MMO issue, and it's led by the Old Republic, because we all think it's going to be an absolutely fantastic game. Just astonishing and brilliant and cool. And Graham's shaking his head as if there's some kind of controversy to this.
Someone take the pain away from Tim.
So Tom kind of talked to the developers and had a bit of a look at it, and he should probably talk us through what's good and what's bad about it.
Yes. They're basically doing the two hardest things you could do setting out to make a game like this. Like, it's the polar opposite of something like Champions Online, where Champions Online takes a basic massive multiplayer game template. It's a lot like World of Warcraft, you know, reskinned. But at the same time, it's not actually massively multiplayer. It's like you have about 30 people on a server at once, and it goes up to like 100 or something, but you never really see that. So it might as well just be a large-scale multiplayer game. The Old Republic generally is massively multiplayer. It's going to have, you know, same kind of server populations as World of Warcraft, and most of the world is going to be proper public spaces where everyone's running into each other. But at the same time, they're going to make it like a really in-depth, scripted, story-driven, voice-acted RPG, putting in all the work to make it like a normal BioWare game. Only because it's a massive multiplayer game, they have to do, you know, 50 times as much content as they would for a normal RPG.
So they're talking about it being the biggest voiceover project certainly in game history, but they kind of like, hey,
possibly
this might
in
be
in entertainment itself.
In entertainment itself. That's like hard.
Yeah, and expensive, you would think. I can't imagine what they're
thinking.
They've
got one guy, just in all the voices.
So how's it going to work in terms of, so I understand like you have companion characters, which is something I haven't seen in an MMO.
Yeah, but you have seen in BioWare games, so it's very much following the BioWare template where you start out as one dude, and there's a character you encounter early on who becomes your friend, and then he follows you around in your party. You only ever have one person with you at once, but you do meet new characters and then can switch around which one you have following with you. And like in BioWare games, the rest is stored in some kind of ethereal stash in the sky from which you can just pluck them. We'll just wait up here in this cloud. But that's the kind of, that gets you onto the weirdest thing about it, which is that it's a massive multiplayer game, only it has a very specific personal story. And the story is different for each of the classes. There are four Imperial classes and Sith-type evil classes, and four Republic classes?
Yeah.
I don't want to call it the Rebellion, because I don't think that's happened yet. And each one has a completely different story, so all of them start in different locations and have different companion characters. But within any given class, you know, if you're a Republic trooper, which is kind of like the warrior equivalent, you are going to have the same story as everyone else who plays, you know, basically a good warrior. And you're going to have the same companions as everyone else who plays a good warrior. So as you're walking around with your Wookiee Chewbacca, you're going to run into other people with a Wookiee Chewbacca who also came from the same place and has the same story.
And no one's going to kind of just...
It's just it's like that bit of Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, I think everyone at the time when they don't play it is just going to kind of have this kind of, But I think once people are playing it, they'll just get over it, and it'll just be a case of, you know, like, if you walk around one of the cities in World of Warcraft, everyone has a cat or something like that, and the pets are similar.
It'd be good if BioWare had a button to make all the Wookiees make the noise at the same time.
Can you talk to other people's companions?
They can interject in conversations that you have with NPCs, but not, like, they don't have a whole speech engine and interactive.
Can you imagine
response
just going,
system?
Excuse me, sir.
So it's kind of baffling because they're doing everything I've always wanted to do in an MMO, or see in an MMO, which is, you know, a big kind of huge story, epic world, great size, but they're doing all this stuff as well that is just kind of the standard bits in MMO. It's like, you know, an auction house, presumably raid content, PvP.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for us to understand where that game is going to go and how that game is going to feel.
They won't talk yet about how stuff like PvP is going to work. They've said there will be open world PvP, And for the structured PvP, they're doing something different that you haven't seen before, but they won't say what. And it's the same for like end game content and raids, yeah, and that kind of stuff. They're not talking yet about the specifics.
I mean, it would be utterly rubbish if there was a capture the flag bit in the Star Wars.
That would be lame. What was it called in Jedi Knight? Capture the Ys Selamari or something. And it was like a little slug that was immune to the Force and stopped you from using Force powers when you were carrying it.
Right.
I'm sure it has basis in one of the books.
I'd like PvP to be based on who shot first.
Yeah. That'd be good. Simply who actually, you could just bar brawls. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Do you think you're going to play it?
Yeah. I'm going to take great pains to design a character who has much, much better hair than the ones we've seen in the walkthrough videos. Because it just can't take your eyes off the hideous plastic wig that the guy's wearing and that. And I think definitely playing a female character would be good. Jennifer Hale is going to be one of the voice actors. I couldn't figure out whether she's actually going to be one of the player characters. I don't think so. I think she's going to be a Republic trooper. But loads of old BioWare favourites are going to be. I think pretty much everyone who's ever acted in a BioWare game is probably going to be in this because they just need that many people.
Well, yeah, every professional voice actor on the planet is probably going to be in it.
It'll be cut up from all their old performances.
What's going to be fun is when Bethesda inevitably do their Elder Scrolls MMO and they have 5 voice actors for the entire thing.
So the only game I can think of that went for full voice for an MMO was EverQuest 2. And, you know, every piece of text in that, so all the story-driven stuff, was read out by someone. And it was horrible.
Yeah, voice acting is difficult to do, but at least, BioWare are pretty much the only company I have a good track record of getting it right every time.
Yeah, that is true. So, you also want to talk about Just Cause.
Yes.
So you reviewed it this issue?
Not.
Oh, no, sorry, the following issue. Sorry. We're actually in the future.
Here
right
in future
now.
Land. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to send this podcast back through time.
You enjoying it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of the most beautiful worlds ever. Just ridiculously, just vast scale, incredibly detailed, and just properly like exotic and tropical and just idyllic. It's basically heaven. Yeah. It's just set in heaven.
See, because I really liked the first Just Cause, but I spent most of my time kind of stuck in trees, getting from one place to the other, and I never kind of really enjoyed the stupid stuff you were doing.
They're both very much games about the way you move around the world, and both of them are unique in terms of just your basic method of getting around if you're not using vehicles. If you steal cars, you can play it like GTA, but the first game is all about basically getting height, and because you couldn't do the ridiculous things you can do in the second one, you basically rolled around helicopters. You would find a helicopter. There are plenty of them around. There'd just be like, even if you weren't in trouble, there'd be military helicopters soaring about. They'd attack gang members and fire rockets into houses and stuff. And you just have to kind of grapple onto one, steal it, then take it up as high as you can, jump out, and then you can pretty much angle yourself however you want. It's all about free falling. And Just Cause 2, because you've got this grappling hook, you can combine the grappling hook and parasail in a slightly, it's like sort of physics fudge.
Yeah.
So
you
suck
kind of
yourself
yeah. in, don't you?
It's physics that works in your head.
Yeah, you can suck yourself into, like, to the top of a tree, fair enough. You had a really strong grappling hook and you just shot yourself towards the tree and then opened a parasail in midair. You kind of could get some lift, probably. But in Just Cause 2, you can also just fire it at the ground ahead of you and pull yourself into that, even though the line's angled downwards, and somehow get enough forward momentum to open your parasail and then get upward momentum and then take off. And from then on, you just never need to touch the ground again. You can literally cross the entire island without ever setting foot on it.
But that is fun, like that feeling of, yeah, you know, if you're walking, you're playing that game wrong. I just kind of, you should be just shooting across between places and flying and kicking the
I think my favourite thing is just running off something really high and jumping. Like, you get that proper feeling of, I'm in a movie now.
Yeah.
That's what movie people do.
It's definitely a game you can play wrong. Because it's, once again, as with Just Cause 1, the missions are just rubbish. They're just, badly scripted, really uninspiring, boring stuff that doesn't involve a grappling hook at any point, really. You know, you still use a grappling hook to get around, but at no point in most missions are you ever required to tie one thing to another or do any inventive physics. It's just go here, kill this guy. And so you can just get in a car, drive there, and then shoot him with a gun, which is the biggest waste of game potential ever. So it's definitely, when you play it, just mess around with the grappling hook and don't make yourself do the missions. Don't think of chaos as a way of... There's this chaos system where when you block government property, you generate chaos, and then at a certain level of chaos, you unlock the next mission. If you think of that as like an RPG mechanic where you're grinding towards the next mission, it just really saps the fun out of it. You start to think about what's the most efficient way to cause chaos? Right. And the answer is steal a helicopter and then just rain fire down on everything. And you can do that, but it's just a really soul-destroying process.
I took down some cranes with some sticky explosives. I couldn't believe how cool it was just to see them fall over.
My favourite thing to destroy in the game is there are these communication towers that you'll see like little radar masts all throughout, and they've got little blinking lights on top of them. And then every now and then, like, you'll see one, but it's over like three mountains away, and it's just so vast that you can see it from that far away. And as you get closer, you realise it's supported by three guy ropes. And if you cut two of those guy ropes, the whole thing just goes... And it's absolutely vast. Like, the chunks just kind of rain down on a base, just smashing everything.
There is one of them in the demo really close to where you just pull, you just turn around and it's above you.
I pulled that down, and I kind of, like, stood heroically as it kind of kind of fell down. Then I realised that it was getting very, very, very close. And you're thinking, shall I move? Finally, no, stayed still. Plonk, hit me on the back of the head, rolled off.
My favourite way to do it is to grapple, before you destroy it, just grapple onto the main mast, keep climbing up with your grappling hook till you get to the very top and stand on the very top while you're in trouble with the law so that helicopters come and fire at you. And eventually their stray shots will just fuck up the tower and destroy it, and so you'll actually be on top of it when it goes... And suddenly you're just standing atop this chunk of metal falling
over. Yeah, what would Jesus do? There should be a whole what would Rico do?
So when I was watching you play, I saw you grapple onto the wings of a wind turbine. And then just rotate around.
this has no purpose whatsoever, but did it complete your accident? I never even considered this would be possible, because it just seems like one of those things game designers don't let you do. But yeah, there are big wind turbines in the game. They're absolutely vast. If you destroy one, you start to get a real sense of how huge they are, because the blades tumble down. You start to realize, shit, that could kill me. But if you just grapple onto it, you have to time it quite carefully, because obviously they're spinning and they're quite far away when you're on the ground. Then you kind of suck yourself in, you cling to it, and then you just stay clung to it as it rotates 360 degrees. <Yeah. laughs> You just see like the skyline behind you spinning.
It'll make you feel seasick.
It is really disoriented.
Awesome.
You can also, one of the other things you can blow up, just in the, like, the reason I'm talking about this more is that it's a lot more fun than the missions, and it's kind of what you do in the game if you're playing it right. It's just run around experimenting and then finding things to blow up. There's pipelines, and you hack them to overload them. Although on PC, because the QuickTime event, they've very intelligently, I think, not assigned it to like jump left mouse button shift, because it's totally unintuitive. They've assigned it to just regular number keys. But since what you're hacking is a keypad, you're basically typing in a code to hack a keypad, which is what you'd do if you had the code to the keypad. But you hack pipelines to overload them, and it has this really spectacular thing where it kind of builds up. You can see the steam coming out, and then it blows up in an absolutely ridiculous blast. You'll stand way, way back, and even so, when it blows up, you'll just be flung miles. And last time I did that, as Rico was walking away, he says, let's see you transport fuel now, you pipeline jerks.
Take that infrastructure that runs the country.
It's like just a rare moment where the game seems to know how ridiculous it is and seems to think that there's actually no real reason we would need to destroy these pipelines.
So, Graham, you've been playing SOPCOM.
I have. I've been playing it with Tom, in fact, and you and Rich in the office. It's what we've been doing with our lunch times pretty much every day for the last 2 or 3 weeks now.
It seems like SOPCOM is getting a fairly rough ride from the guys who played the demo.
The demo only contains the single player stuff, which I haven't touched.
Some tutorial and two bad missions.
They shouldn't have an opinion anyway.
This is true.
It's not a great campaign anyway, but those two missions really don't show off what little virtue it has.
I think the original SOPCOM had a terrible campaign, and it was only really like fun in skirmish. Do you think it's the same for this one?
Yeah, definitely.
The thing I've been hearing, and obviously I don't play it or understand it in any way whatsoever, was people were complaining about what they've done to the economy.
See, I love what they've done to the economy, because in the first game, I struggled to play it. My mass economy or whatever would fail. I tried to build an experimental unit, and that was it. I could just not do anything. My entire economy would collapse. They've simplified it so much in this game and turned it all into a tech tree thing where you're just getting research points and selecting what route you want to take through the tech tree. And so I just spend the whole time, you know, looking ahead, picking the thing I want, whether it's the loyalty cannon or the unit cannon or whatever, and just, you know, aiming for that. And so while you're playing, you're very easily and very quickly building up this army of ridiculous massive units. But at the same time, you have a sense of all the other paths you could have taken. And so, you know, I get to the game, an end of a game after an hour, and I want to play it again, and this time go this side and try this thing, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Are you enjoying it as a skirmish game against the AI, or are you playing it against other players?
I've been playing it solely against the AI, so like three or four of us on a team playing against the computer, and we tried to play a game against human beings.
It didn't work out.
It didn't really work out because
we had we were trying, like, there's a new 4v4 map that was like one of the pre-order DLCs or something, so we wanted to try that out, and it was me, Graham, and Rich. Rich was having trouble getting into the game, so we were sitting in the game waiting for him. We were still planning to play against AI, right. And just a bunch of players dropped in because suddenly the game was out and we kind of forgot other people had it. And so loads of people jumped in, and then we hadn't bothered setting up our starting positions or anything because we were waiting for Rich, and then we'd organise it properly. And people were suddenly bitching at us for not being on the right team, like, hey, why are you on team 2? You should be in the south of your team 2. And then someone put themselves on team 8. Then, like, people were bitching at each other, like, three people left and then three more people joined, and then eventually thought, okay, let's give this a go, let's actually fight some real human beings because we can probably take them because we've been playing the game for months. And we finally managed to start a game. We, you know, all went team 2 and made sure everyone in the north of team 2 persuaded some people to switch sides and stuff, and then as soon as we got into the game, it suddenly accelerated to a ridiculous rate so no one could control anything. And it's because I'd left the game speed on adjustable, because when it's just us, you know, you can trust people not to fuck with that until you actually want to. And so I just pressed escape and ended the server and kicked everyone out. Well, never played against humans again.
I was reading on the weekend about people who bought the retail copy, it uses Steamworks. So when it patches, it actually tries to patch the entire game again. So it downloads like 4.5 gigabytes worth of stuff. Because the way I think the patch doesn't come as a patch, it comes as an entire game.
It's had a lot of small updates, so it's clearly capable of patching in some efficient way. But yeah, there have been one or two where it just completely seems to download about 3 gigabytes of stuff.
That's so unclever.
Yeah.
Recommend people buy it, though?
Yes. I mean, it's the most fun I've had playing a strategy game in a long, long time. And in multiplayer, the most fun I've had since, like, Red Alert 2.
Okay. Because I thought it would be a game that would essentially tide me over until StarCraft. But actually, I've been playing SOCOM more than I've been playing the StarCraft 2 beta. I mean, I think there's a good reason for that, in that StarCraft 2 beta, you are playing against ninjas.
Pretty much. StarCraft 2 also just feels to me like a game from 1998. In that, and not in that fun Red Alert 2 way I just mentioned. Yeah. But just the micromanagement of it is just, and the scale of it really frustrates me.
But you are rubbish at it.
I am rubbish at it, but the problem is that I'm not having fun while being rubbish at it. You know, I was rubbish at SOCOM 2 when I first started that as well, but I wanted to improve. And aside from being called out on the internet and kind of wanting to avenge or, you know, get revenge.
So Quintin, one of our freelancers, and Kieran of RPS played against you and Rich.
It was my second game ever. So
you and Rich really did disappoint.
I couldn't work out how to build the fighty men. I was Zerg. And I went Zerg, and all I could work out was, you know, how to build workers.
Because you need
a hatchery and you need a spawning pool.
Yeah, you need it.
And I had the hatchery and not the spawning pool, and so I was like, I can't work this out.
You
and
then really I just shouldn't have gone Zerg.
Yeah, and then I got swamped by Quentin.
Next time, go Protoss, please.
Yeah, I've been playing Protoss quite a bit, and I'm starting to get the hang of them. And Terrans as well is much easier.
The thing I found most absurd playing StarCraft 2, because it's been years and years since I played Warcraft 3, which would have been the last, you know, traditional RTS of that form. The thing that just seemed almost comic to me. Is I suddenly remember that in these types of RTSs, we used to put a base down and then build hundreds and hundreds of peasants to commute from your base to the gold mine that's 5 feet away. Because you're not allowed to build the base on the gold mine, because that would just be cheating. And there's like a radius of how you can't build it too close to Vespene gas or, you know, the magic crystals.
Yeah.
And the Protoss are like, well, they'll go to the Vespian gas mines and make little, like, magical cubes that they contain the Vespian gases and then carry it back to the base. Guys, can't we just put, like, a hose down there?
It is the future.
And it's a real, like, proper major part of the game. You have to keep on building these guys to make a bigger commuting force and then set up, like, little cubes so that as soon as one guy comes out of the mine, there's another one just going. It just seems so absurd to me now.
That is true. I do really like StarCraft, though. I have to say, like, I think StarCraft's amazing, but there's something about StarCraft that just has me playing.
I haven't found any unit in StarCraft 2 which I love as much as, you know, a dozen of the units in Supreme Commander 2.
I found, sorry, you know, carry on.
I was just going to mention the unit cannon. You know, it's a cannon that fires tanks.
This is in SubCom 2.
It's interesting. I mean, StarCraft has kept all its sort of tropes of what made it great, and SubCom seems to have just went, bugger it, we'll just do what we want.
And the fan reaction seems like StarCraft fans love StarCraft 2 and SubCom fans hate SubCom 2. But I don't think it's fair to say that, like, people hate SubCom 2. I've seen loads of positive feedback, and it's often from people who have put off SubCom 1, and there's no shortage of those people. I think there's more of those than people who actually like SubCom 1.
Okay, interesting.
Graham was saying there's no unit in StarCraft 2 that he's really fallen in love with. There's one for the Zerg that I have, which is their turret, which is, it's like just a worm that's kind of burrowed into the ground. And when something comes near it, I didn't know this until I was actually first attacked, it just kind of lunges out of the ground and kind of stabs it with this horrible tentacle and then retracts again. And I was in a game with Rich, I think Graham and Jim, maybe?
Possibly.
And Jim was doing real. In fact, Jim pretty much crushed me. I tried to crush Rich early on and he completely decimated my forces, so I had nothing left. And Jim kind of half invaded my base, because you get like a starting position and then there's a secondary base point where you can set up another one. He saw my secondary base and destroyed that and started mining crystals himself, but never bothered to come into my main base. I don't know if he didn't know it was there or just didn't care. But I got myself into a bind where I'd spent my last Vespian gas or crystals or whatever to the point where I couldn't build any drones to make any more, and all my drones had been wiped out, or I'd sent them to attack or something. And so I just sat there watching Jim build up and, you know, getting more and more Marines going into the crystal mines and harvesting all that, while Rich and I think Graham were still in the game. And then towards the end of it, I wasn't really paying attention. I was alt-tabbing away and stuff. I suddenly remember that those tentacle guys, you can uproot them and then put them where you like. And I had about 10 of those things. So it's just in the middle of nowhere, like after he'd had that base safe for ages, just 10 tentacle things like waddled down to where all his like minor guys were, planted themselves on their main supply route, and then just plucked them off one by one in this kind of horrible harvest.
Awesome. I absolutely love the Colossus that the Protoss have, because it is just kind of, it's War of the Worlds style walker thing that just kind of clomps along, and it can walk up the side of kind of cliffs and things. And it's got this kind of super cool beam that just flies at the infantry. I really like that. That's good.
Yep, War of the Worlds tripod things are always good.
Mm.
Okay. Craig, you want to talk a bit about Stalker?
Oh yeah, I've been terrified myself playing Stalker.
Yeah?
It's a horrible game. Just it delights in putting you in situations where all you've got is just sweat coming out of your body. What are the Bloodsuckers?
Yeah.
At one point, it puts you in. You've got these horrible creatures called Bloodsuckers who are really difficult to kill, invisible when they move, and just attack you by going blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And they eat the back of your
head.
They eat the back of your head.
Right.
So you get jumped on from behind.
Okay.
So, but they just. Because this strange sort of AI ecology, you can never tell where they're going to be. So, I mean, you in Stalker, the new one, there's a huge area called Pripyat River Basin with all these ships that are now areas people live in, and dry grass. It's really about head height. So if you're walking through that and you hear blah, 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 an invisible thing come through there, it's fucking terrifying. If that happens in the dark, Tim.
Okay.
You know, in the dark of Stalker, there's those things. There's also dogs with glowing eyes.
Well, the Bloodsuckers have glowing eyes as well, and they're the only things you can see when they're invisible. There's just a tiny pair of red eyes. So when you're hunting for one, they're invisible enough that even when you know one's coming, you have to really concentrate, stay perfectly still and watch for it. And all you do see when you do glimpse them is just a pair of red eyes floating towards you, and then it goes...
But you've got to find their nest. Apparently they've
been... Their nest?
You've got to find their nest.
Oh, I'm not fucking doing that, Michael. I got that one. I tried it once, and I was just... So, I was like trembling as I walked away from it.
So you got told to hunt them down, and then you go back with another guy who comes and says, let's go and kill those fuckers. and you turn up to, and that happened to me at night time again, so I was in the dark, crawling through this, and buildings of Stalker are either a saviour or a curse. You don't know what's in there, but they can save your life. So we go into this just horrible, dark, grimy building, and the guy goes, here we are here, and he presses the button, and we're going to the basement, which is like 10 times the worst place you want to be in life. So we get down there, and there's the bloodsuckers are all asleep, but they're all standing up.
Right.
And they're just slightly purring, aren't they? It's sort of a...
Yeah, just like that. Heads are hung.
And you've got to sneak through this level full of sleeping, standing up bloodsuckers without trying to make any noise. They're trying to disturb them at any point whatsoever. I threw a grenade at them.
they have incredibly good hearing, but they can't see at all. Like that, it's their eyes are, you know, shut in some kind of fundamental way that they can't glimpse any light whatsoever. You know, if you shine your flashlight right in their face, I didn't know that when I first went in, or I think the guy told me, and I wasn't really paying attention. So first thing I did, I walked down the steps and reloaded my gun. Just everyone.
But they all look like Dr. Zoidberg. They all look
cute. I had an amazing moment with the bloodsucker. It wasn't really the bloodsucker that I was fighting in the first place, but it just capped off a kind of series of horrors where I set off on a mission at dusk, which is the stupidest thing you can ever do. I knew it was stupid, but I thought this will be interesting. And it was just at a hostage rescue mission on my way to somewhere else, and I got to the place and they said, hey, what are you doing here, Stalker? You better leave while you still have legs. So they were kind of neutral, but clearly they were going to get hostile if I approached them, so I backed off and tried to snipe them. And at that point I realised there were 13 of them, and they had, like, it seems like they have Gatling guns or something. I think it's just AKs, but there's just this torrent of fire just rips through you, and the only way I could survive was just by hiding in this little, like, upturned metal crate. Like, it was the only cover I could find. I'd pick the worst possible place to attack them from. And so I just hid in this little metal crate while they all muttered to themselves and, you know, took pot shots and hunted me down and stuff. And I actually tried to track them over by shining my flashlight out and then firing off the odd shot or throwing bolts and stuff.
Okay.
And then eventually a couple of them came around the corner and I mowed them down, and then just no one else was coming. I was waiting for ages and it was getting dark, and I'm thinking, fuck, I've got to do this before it gets properly dark. And so I just bolted out of the metal crate and just ran straight into their base, like past everybody, thinking that most of them would be near the metal crate
right
then.
Right.
And by the time I got into the base properly, I took loads of shots and stuff, but just healed up with a med kit once I was in there, hidden just some obscure corner. And it was pitch black by this point. Like, night had properly fallen. I couldn't see a damn thing. And of course, if you turn your flashlight on, everyone can see where you are, so they will come hunting for you. So I had this bizarre situation where they saw me turn on my flashlight, and then I ducked around a corner. So they all knew roughly where I was, but they weren't all converging on me or firing at me because they didn't know, they couldn't see me anymore.
Right.
And so I'm just standing in the dark with my flashlight off, waiting for them to come around the corner, and I can't see them pretty much until they shoot me. And so there's these moments where, like, if you really, really look closely and you have no lights on the room, on in your room at all, you can, like, just about sometimes see something move, but more often than not, it's just your eyes playing tricks on you. So every now and then I'd just catch, like, a hood maybe moving past, and I'd fire wildly, and then they'd fire wildly because they saw my muzzle flash. Or more often I wouldn't see anything at all, and then suddenly I'd just be shot at from nowhere. But because they couldn't see me, they usually wouldn't hit with that shot, so then I'd see them and take pot shots like that.
I have had someone throw a grenade at me at that point.
And eventually I fought my way through all of them and get to the final room where a guy says, take one more step, and I didn't hear the rest of what he said because I just shot him in the face, which is how all hostage situations play out. And he went down, and it still said one on the little blip counter. You have a blip counter telling you how many people are left. And so I told the guy, you know, wait here, I'll see what's going on, and hunted around for a while, searched some corpses, couldn't find anything at all, turned on my flashlight, you know, not caring if anyone saw because I wanted to lure the guy out. I couldn't find him, went back to the hostage, and then said, okay, come with me and we'll make our way out. Got all the way out, absolutely paranoid, just hunting every corner looking for this guy. Where is he? Where is he? I thought he searched everywhere. And then as I was leaving, I thought, maybe the one was the guy I was escorting. Like, the blip counter doesn't know who's friend or foe, so he was counting that stalker as someone else. And then a bloodsucker got me in the back of the head. And that's how it relates to the topic.
Ta-da! Have you got to prep it yet?
No, I'm about to go there.
Have you got the money to get the suit?
No.
Okay, so in Stalker, you only get to prep it by going through this gas-filled tunnel. But you have to buy a special suit to get through that, and it's like 30,000 or whatever.
Jesus.
Yes, exactly. And you can make money by hunting down artifacts, but at that point I wasn't actually very good at that yet, so I just decided I was going to hunt corpses.
They're easy prey.
They are easy prey, but I felt really bad about it.
Yes, I got one.
Because when I got back to the boat in the middle of the river basin, a bunch of people were coming out. There was a huge amount of bandits coming out and thing, and turns out there was an attack on the base. So bodies started falling all the time. So I'm sneaking through this war zone, basically, just scavenging corpses and whatever. And I got to this one guy who was down on the ground. I started and had tons of stuff, tons of guns, and I filled myself up. And I'm just about on the edge of having too much to carry. And another guy comes along, and he bends over the corpse and starts looting them as well. And he's got a huge gun on the back of his thing. It's like, okay, bang, hit him in the head, and just greedily gobble everything up. And now I can't move. Because Stalker, you have two sets. You have one that really tires you out, and then there's one you're just frozen, you can't move at all. Sure. And then suddenly the guy's friend saw me. So I ended up putting everything back in his corpse, dragging... the other guy had like a vial of Hercules, which boosts your strength. So take that and run back to the base. Sell everything, run back. Pick all the stuff off his corpse, which if I didn't have Hercules, I'd be like... too much. Oh, I can't even speak today. It's gone wrong. I'll be like overloaded again. Yeah. So I start running back to the base again, and I get a yard before the door, and Hercules rears up. So I have to start dumping everything, and then all these suckers come along and start picking everything up again.
The shit.
That's just such a horrible game. It just doesn't want you to play it.
So I always kind of looked to the first two Stalkers as more about potential than actual kind of fun times you can have with it. And I never really got on, particularly with the first one, because it was just so hard. And you know, there were stupid things like a headshot. It felt like you needed three or four headshots to take a guy down.
Yeah.
Is this the game to kind of go back to it now?
Definitely. And in fact, that headshot thing is a specific point of contention I had with the first game. Like, it just felt like I was pouring ammo into people, and it was like more of a resource management thing than actual combat, because it just took so much attrition to kill anyone. And in this game... in the dead of night, I had a situation where there was a guy walking around with a flashlight looking for people. Like, see who's hostile, because you hover your cursor over and it goes red. And he was coming towards me, and I was actually coming up behind him, and then he suddenly turned around and started coming towards me. And I couldn't move away fast enough without standing up and running and being noisy, so in which case he would see me, and he had a bunch of friends nearby as well. And I just had to slip off the ledge I was on and kind of duck behind a bush, and then had a silenced pistol out, but it's just a very basic, cheap weapon.
Yeah.
And just as he was about to come in within torch range, I just thought, fuck it, I've got to go for this, and just took one shot at his head. And just perfectly clipped him, and he fell to the ground with just no sound whatsoever. Awesome. A bunch of his friends nearby just didn't even suspect a thing. And a moment after that, there was some anomalous radioactive kind of glimmer in the sky. So if I'd waited any longer, it would have been completely lit up by that.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, as a shooter fan, I appreciate the fact that I can shoot someone in the leg and they'll run around the corner and then they'll die.
Yeah.
You know, the eye reacts the same as you do. If you get shot, you have to bandage yourself up, otherwise you're going to drop. But there's a lot of times where I've shot someone and then backed off because I knew the fact they're running away is going to actually kill them.
This does sound absolutely brilliant, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That it's an amazing game. It's so atmospheric. The sound really gets to you as well. There's just a constant... through everything you're doing all the time. It's like Thief.
Yeah.
That sort of mechanical groan, you know.
So can you, is there a kind of, you can play it in a certain way, or you can kind of specialise in doing certain things, or?
I was just gathering stuff, selling it, and then shooting things.
Okay.
I mean, there's not like a...
You can't say specialise in like a stealth character.
Not really.
Okay. It's all right.
Not early on. There might be a bit where you get like a special suit or something.
Okay.
Because the suits add a lot to what you have.
Okay. So I've been playing Mirror's Edge recently, which I don't really know why.
Awesome.
But it was just on kind of my games playlist that gradually extends forever into infinity. It's quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I'm amazed at kind of like how well put together it is. I imagine it's... I think I'm probably about 2/3 of the way through it, and it only took me about 6 hours so far. But yeah, it's just like really well done, really, really nice game, and absolutely beautiful as well.
Yeah.
The cityscapes are just phenomenally pretty, and I just love it.
Yeah, I think it's the most beautiful city I've seen in a game. Yeah. Like, I've never seen a place that just, it makes me excited to be there in that way.
I think there's like some cool little physics stuff in the PC version as well, if you've got like a decent graphics card, where the kind of soft materials flap and kind of.
That's in video only.
There's actually, yeah, it's Show Off Physics, and they made a big deal of it because it's unique to PC version and stuff, and obviously NVIDIA just, I think, pay a bunch of money to have this stuff pimped. And there's actually, like, a bit where you're running along some scaffolding outside a building, all these big blue sheets of stuff, and there's some, like, clear tarpaulin hanging down, and the normal version of the game, you just go around a corner and that stuff isn't there because they can't do the material physics. In the physics version of the game, they've added a cop who runs out in front of the tarpaulin so you can do a flying kick and he'll go flying through it.
That's the exact thing I was going to comment on. It's so cool. And I'm just kind of see him fly down and then the kind of the it's be flapping. It's just really atmospheric.
I've done that bit about 25 times because I wanted a screenshot of him going through the tarpaulin. It's really hard.
There is one really hard bit I had where so the thing I'd say about it is that don't listen to any of the dialogue.
No.
Or any kind of the cutscenes, just skip them because it doesn't make any sense and it's pretty ropey.
Yeah.
So there's just this kind of boss guy and it turned into like this weird QuickTime event.
Oh, God.
Explain what was going on.
Yeah, I know the one you mean. The guy with the pipe.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so basically, I've been sat here trying to figure out what we should be doing on the PC Gamer blog. And I think that was kind of my final kind of moment where I realised, for fuck's sake, we need to have a tips blog somewhere in the world. We're not going to do a tips blog, but you know, just stupid stuff like that. Someone needs to sit down and just explain how to get past it.
Yeah.
Because you have to kind of specially time a kind of attack, don't you, to knock it back. And there's no kind of feedback as to why what you're doing right or wrong.
Yep.
It's just shoot yourself in the face.
It's just the cutscene plays out the bad way a million times, and then one time you figure out that you're
because actually in control.
You were pressing it at roughly the right time, but you had to press it at exactly the right time. There's actually a tip I can give right now for Just Cause 2, which I guess won't be relevant for a little while, but there's a mission where you have to kill, like, a faction mission, not one of the main ones. This famed mercenary is one of the badass mercenaries, you know, one of the most deadly mercenaries in the world. And what they mean by that is that he has over a million hit points. He's just absurdly, ridiculously, preposterously tough, comically tough. So after a couple of attempts of, like, you know, throwing explosives at him, attacking with a shotgun, and then at one point I just drove a tank up to him and started firing, like, at this massive minigun on top. Just started firing that for about a minute, didn't kill him. In fact, he out-damaged me with his normal assault rifle. Actually started just destroying my tank, just shooting me with that. But my tip is go for the head, because there are some people in the game who are effectively invulnerable except for the head. There are people, like, the colonels and stuff will only take damage from the head. So anything you do directly to their face will work.
Oh, okay.
If you're just hitting their body, it's never going to kill them.
Yeah. So can you take him out in one shot if you get him in the face?
No. Even with the fully upgraded sniper rifle, it takes 7 direct headshots.
Oh, is a creature like that in Stalker, like this sort of half... It's got no legs and it crawls along the
ground. Oh, is it the pseudo-giant?
Yeah.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen one yet.
Oh, it's such a jerk. It's in the underground laboratories in Pripyat. And... I thought you had to kill it to get past it. You just have to dodge it and get up.
I would accept that guy's hardness if he was a robot or an alien.
Yeah. It's just a burly wrestler.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all. Ah, so stupid. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about the disastrous Ubisoft DRM story that's kind of causing us all pain and chaos at the moment. It may be that... what we're saying now is out of date by the time we actually go live with this, but I think it's actually worth kind of coming out with. We reviewed Assassin's Creed 2, this issue, and we've given it a decent score, but the first line of the review is, it's brilliant, don't buy it. I kind of wanted to explain a little bit about how we got to that position and why we did it. Assassin's Creed 2 is a fantastic game, really, really good fun. Really smart, a much better kind of stealthy assassin in historical times game than the first one ever was.
Yeah, definitely.
It's absolutely brilliant. But the DRM is very bad.
It's very bad. It's a mistake.
It's a mistake. And, you know, we've had a story today where about kind of 5 or 10% of people playing Assassin's Creed weren't able to because they got hit by a denial of service.
Yeah,
or
for like 9
service.
Hours. So the system is... when you start the game, it has to connect to Ubisoft servers to see if there's an update, and then when it's finished updating, it launches the launcher, and the launcher syncs your save games to their online servers.
Well, that doesn't seem so bad,
and
Tom.
If any of that process doesn't work, it simply won't let you play the game. It just the game won't run. And if while you're playing you lose a connection, it kicks you back to the menu. They've patched it so that you don't lose any progress, which was that was initially the case. You would lose all your progress since the last checkpoint. But now it does save exactly where you are, but still you're kicked out of the game for being disconnected from the internet.
Why would they not do that to begin with?
And the thing that's made it worse just lately is that, as Tim says, there's a denial of service attack on Ubi servers, which meant their servers went down, which meant even if you had a perfectly good internet connection, you still couldn't play the game. And this is a single-player game. There's no multiplayer functionality whatsoever.
It's been out for... It came out on Friday in the UK, and for...
Tuesday in America.
The 48 hours it's been available in the UK, it's been down for 9 of those.
Yeah.
And there's, so it's been down for some people for 9 of those hours. I think that's absolutely disastrous. And, we want everyone to be aware that the game itself may be very good, but we recommend right now you do not buy it.
Yeah, obviously when we wrote this review, this hadn't happened because this happened yesterday. That magazine is on sale now. So basically we had to... The review obviously has to say exactly what this DRM is, how it works, and that we basically say that it's a system that just depends on external factors that, for no good reason, doesn't offer any benefit to the player except saving your games online, which to me is pointless.
One of the things I wanted to say was that it may... We talked back and forth about, knocking marks off for the DRM and, should we mark it down for it? And it was a really, really difficult decision. And for about 2 of the 4 weeks where we spent thinking about this, or kind of however long it was, I was all for knocking the score down. However, one of the things I think is that we don't know if this DRM is going to be around in 6 months.
Yeah.
And I personally think, I don't have any inside information, or I don't have any kind of access over and above what we've posted online, but I honestly think they'll back down from this. I think, what will happen is that the DRM can be patched out. They've come out and told us that, if the game is hacked, they will patch out the DRM.
They said they'll consider it.
They'll consider it. I think in the next 3 or 4 months, the DRM thing will be gradually withdrawn, and they'll just kind of go back to normal, and then in like a year's time they will come forward with a model that is similar to CNC4 or StarCraft 2, in which you can play the games online, you can play the games offline, but the online part of it offers much more than simply save games. I don't think the way that they've kind of pushed this forward now is doing them any favours, doing gamers any favours, or doing Ubisoft as a company any favours. And I would actually, because I know a couple of guys from Ubisoft listen to this. I would seriously suggest you pull it.
Yeah. And so we've left... I've given Assassin's Creed 2 the score that the game itself deserves, which is a brilliant game. Basically because I think it's more important than ever to know exactly how good the game is, because we can't review how much, what percentage of the time these servers are going to be online for, because we have no more information than you do. So it's up to you to decide whether this DRM completely ruins it for you, or whether it's just a slightly annoying niggle, or whether you just don't care at all.
So there's a bunch of big Ubi games coming out in the near term. So we've got Silent Hunter, Settlers, Splinter Cell, the rest of it. We will be reviewing those games normally, and we will say how good they are. But in all of those reviews, I promise you now, we'll explain exactly about what kind of DRM restrictions there are, how your playing of it will be affected. I think in the past we've been pretty bad at kind of showing how we deal with this stuff, and I just want to kind of be as open as possible, because apparently PC Gamer has a bit of a responsibility to PC gamers.
The good thing is that Ubisoft are giving us the game with their version of the public's DRM in it. Usually we get our own reviewer version of DRM.
Yeah, that's when it gets tough.
Horrifying.
Yeah. All there's sometimes what we get is terrible too, but. It's tricky when you get a version that doesn't have the same DRM as the retail will, and you just have to ask them what the retail DRM is going to be.
I think very often the guys who we deal with don't really understand what the issues are surrounding the DRM. So think back to the Bioshock 2 kind of scenario, and the Bioshock 1 actually, is they didn't really understand why the activation limits were a problem. And trying to explain to the guys, this is why it's an issue, can you explain to us what you're going to do, is you have we're in a position very often where we're trying to educate the people we talk to about the issues within PC gaming.
And they're the people that make the games.
Yeah. So never underestimate the kind of the lack of knowledge at all levels of the games industry.
And the human race.
And the human race, of course. But on a more positive note, like, Assassin's Creed 2 is really good, and that's amazing. Because I can't believe how much it expands on the first game.
There's the combat is I didn't play Assassin's Creed much.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, basically because I didn't like the combat. But the combat here is much more kind of it's basically a game where straight blows don't really do much. Like a direct attack is never going to kill somebody straight off, and so it's all about doing getting behind people, doing counterattacks. And also, there's just a certain period after somebody sees you and goes to attack you where they're vulnerable to just being killed immediately. And with the hidden blades, you're very, very quick. And so there's these great situations where there'll be something valuable in a room. You'll see it marked on your map. It's like a treasure chest or maybe one of the assassin's seals or something. And there'll be four guards standing outside. And when you approach them, they kind of push you back and they get aggro. But they don't attack. And it usually takes me a couple of tries, but there's a certain sweet spot where just before they actually hit you with their hands, you can hit the attack button to do a double hidden blade neck stab and kill two of them. And they just drop dead straight then and there. And if you're really fast and you position yourself just right, you can get the other two before they fully have their weapons out and are in combat ready mode and do that to them as well. It's just this, like, little like rotation of 90 degrees between you just walk in.
My favourite thing about it is... in those exactly the same situations, rather than trying to kill people, is finding a group of hookers, walking towards them, setting the hookers on them.
Hookers, fly!
But it is like, fly, my pretties, fly! It's just fantastic. And I can't believe as well, it's got this gorgeous countryside that you can explore.
Yeah,
as well.
You just ride around Tuscany on horseback and stuff.
Yeah. And then when you get to the new cities, like Venice. So my wife is a history teacher, and she takes a group of kids... or she has been taking a group of kids to Venice and many other kind of Italian cities every year. And she was just absolutely flabbergasted at the detail. And she said, she didn't realise it was Venice at first. And she kind of had this kind of feeling of
familiarity
to it and deja vu. And then I said, yeah, it's Venice. She just absolutely kind of just stopped still. It was amazing. Yeah. I think they've just done a fantastic job with it. Bastards.
In all but one respect.
Shall we do some questions from Twitter?
Ooh, do we want to talk about Portal 2?
Yes, we do, actually. That's probably... Portal 2 has just been announced, I know very little about it because I've had my head down on the mag. some of the guys here have been reading about it.
Yeah, there's a particular... One of the biggest changes, Gala, is that you can now... There's like paints that you can daub on the walls that have special physical properties. Like there's a kind of bouncy paint where when you walk over it, you'll be bouncing into the air. And this all comes from a game called Tag that was made by a bunch of DigiPen students. And Valve played their innovative game based around one central cool, strange mechanic and then hired them all to work on a first-person puzzler. Yeah.
This sounds familiar. Yeah.
So they've done like a repeat of the whole Portal situation. And Tag is a game where you're in a white city, not unlike Mirror's Edges, and all you have is a paint gun. And you can paint like green paint on the floor, and when you walk on it, it bounces you into the air. There's no jump button, so that's all the only way you can jump. And then you can paint it on walls to bounce off walls and stuff like that. And then you get a red paint, which makes you go faster when you run over it. And then quite a few levels in, you get a blue paint, which makes you stick to that wall. And then you find yourself doing stuff like spraying a long path of like a red carpet of the speed paint, running along it, then just before you get to the edge of the building, doing one splat of green paint so it propels you into the air. And then as you like graze the ceiling, looking upwards and spraying blue paint all over that so you stick to it. And then that rotates your view 180 degrees so you're upside down. And then you're walking on the ceiling painting blue paint everywhere you want to climb onto. It's absolutely amazing.
That sounds quite good.
That's what's going to happen in Portal.
Yeah, so they hired them. Yeah. as you might.
All that and Portals at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's too much.
And also, the original game, the levels were sort of static, but you could see where they were being pushed together from the pistons of the average size. That actually moves around as well now.
Oh, my poor brain.
And co-op.
Yeah, co-op, yeah.
Oh, no.
With four portals and paints flying through them.
And suction. Yeah, there are other sort of properties, like you could put a portal over a hose, basically, that will suck up something that's in your way. Crazy stuff Jesus. Like that, yeah. They said they want to make you, is it think about what you do a lot more, rather than just sort of reacting, or and they want to make you feel really smart playing the game, apparently.
But then I'll have to be smart.
Yeah, the level of smartness Valve think about their fans, given what they did at the end of with Portal and turned that into an ARG to promote this game, is just astonishing.
But the thing is, like, they're much smarter than I are. They can design puzzles.
I are not so smart. Yeah.
They can design puzzles that they can solve, but I can guarantee I will never be able to solve
them. But you have co-op, so you have someone else there.
Sorry?
Did you complete Portal?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
But that was only after your help.
I think the genius of Portal is that it's not that difficult a puzzle game, but at many junctures it seems completely impossible.
Yeah.
That's always the sign of a good one to me.
Yeah.
I love the co-op characters.
Yeah.
So they are two little robots.
They're made up of, like, one of them is basically a turret. You can see it's been built out of a turret, and the other one's basically one of GLaDOS's personality
orbs.
So you can see that's the central part of it, and it's got these, one's got a portal gun in his arm and all that kind of stuff.
So the thing that always amazed me about the first Portal was that despite a very limited, what was obviously a very limited graphical budget, they came out with an art style that was just absolutely gorgeous and smart and clever. How does it look?
Well, it's set 200 years after, or 300 years after the original game, so they've got that art style, but it's all being sort of crept in from the outside world. So there's like leaves and creepers and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was confusing because they said that you were going to be playing as Shell.
Well,
again.
Remember when you woke up in the original game? You were in like a stasis thing anyway.
Mm.
You don't know how long you've been in there. It's probably the same for this game.
That's true.
Robo legs as well.
Yeah. And they redesigned Shell as well.
Well, you had supports, yeah. But that wouldn't allow you to live for 300 years.
Are they going to do time travelling portals?
No, that was everyone thought it'd be time travel because it's all the vines. It was just because it's
Arbitrary.
This is the cover of Game Informer, where the front of the cover is like a clean white wall with a portal in it, leading to like an overgrown GLaDOS, GLaDOS with like vines all over and stuff, and the vines creeping through the portal. And then the back cover is the other side, so you see it from the overgrown world looking into this nice clean lab. And you kind of think, if these two places are in portal firing range of each other, then they could be the same place at different times. But no, so I think that would be awesome, though.
That's kind of what Singularity is trying to do, though, which is the Raven shooter.
Yeah.
I wonder what will be the better game.
But so this is the crazy thing, is we haven't seen Singularity for ages. They've been kind of totally dark on it. That's going to be out by the end of June, we think.
In a previous PC Gaming podcast, Graham comes back from seeing Singularity and tells us why it's going to suck, and every reason he gives makes it sound like the best game ever.
It's really not, though.
I can believe it.
I think that's probably why it's been delayed, is that it was just no one was excited about it, and so I wonder if they've just held it back to try and make it better.
Maybe listen to our podcast.
It has a TMD.
Yes, time management device.
No, it's time manipulation. Time management.
Okay, so.
It just be like a portfolio.
Yeah.
Just a diary. 3 o'clock, I'm going to shoot a guy.
Okay, fun. And see, Singularity just kind of interests me in a little bit, because it's Raven.
That's why it doesn't interest me.
Yeah, king of mediocre games.
Raven have made really good mediocre games for a long time.
I can't believe I've been this mean about someone. Shall I tell my Raven joke then?
No, definitely not.
It's the, you know, we talked about Portal 2 and about how much they seem to just think about things and how smart they are.
Yeah.
And this Singularity looks like a game about time manipulation, which is just made by people who haven't really thought about it very hard at all. They just, someone suggests something and it goes, and that's fine. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so you shoot some people with the time manipulation device and they turn into mutants. You shoot other things with it and they reverse in time.
If they mutate, then it's going forward in time. And if they get old, then it's going forward in time?
You reverse them backwards and they turn into proto-humans. And proto-humans
are
bald, tall, screaming men who run at you.
What is the advantage of turning them into that?
Actually, they don't run at you. They run at amoebas. The other soldiers. They run at your enemies.
Okay.
So, and there are plants that have mutated, because there's been like a nuclear disaster here, and plants that have mutated into trip mines. You know, this is the level of imagination.
It could happen.
If you want a confuse spell, just have a confuse spell. Don't say it's taking them back into time so that they de-evolve into a previous species, which is angry at the guards.
It might be really good, though. Like, if it's been put back, I mean, they haven't shown anything for...
The same thing happened with other time travel shooter, that, and they just... What was it called?
Time Shift.
Yep. Yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah, but that was terrible, and then they threw it back, and it was still terrible.
It changed publishers, didn't it? And they...
Vendor gave them a lot of money and polished it up, and it looked pretty.
The industry has, like, a really big problem with time travel. Because... it happens all the time. People keep coming back from the future and making fun of us. Max Payne did Bullet Time, right? And it had its own, like, brand name. It was Bullet Time. And since then, everyone who does slow-mo gets criticised for copying Bullet Time and being unoriginal and all that shit. And then people say, okay, we've got to do more than Bullet Time. We'll do, like, a game where you can rewind people into proto-humans so that they attack other guards. And that shit. And all we really need is just rewind, like, it's just slow-mo. Slow-mo is awesome. You don't, like, every time a film uses slow-mo, you don't say, oh, that's just copying Max Payne's Bullet Time. Like, just because someone gave something a brand name, it doesn't mean it can't be a valid technique to use in everything. Yeah. Like, Just Cause 2 would be, I swear to God, 10% better if it had slow-mo. Like, we had I was showing you in the office when I was messing around with, like, the personal fighter jet you get in that you can, in mid-flight, get out and stand on the top. And then I took out a sniper rifle and decided to try and snipe someone from that. Of course you can't. Like, you can fire, like, 20 shots and you'll never hit anything. But if there was slow-mo in that game, you could do an assassination by standing on your own plane, lining up a sniper shot and shooting someone in the head on the way past.
That needs to be modded in.
Exactly. But they wouldn't do it because then they get accused of copying Bullet Time. And, oh, it's so unoriginal, it's got slow-mo in it.
Do you know what I want in Just Cause 2, actually? Is a mod that allows me to just wheel my mouse up and down with my mouse wheel, and that changes the time.
a time management device.
Yeah, a time management device.
And if you shoot the Panawan guards, they turn into proto-humans and attack other Panawan guards.
You just keep on wheeling it backwards, do you end up fighting dinosaurs?
Yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be great.
They should put dinosaurs in that game. That'd be amazing.
Every game should have dinosaurs in it.
And time travel.
So many mods that try to add dinosaurs to a game. Like, there's that Crysis mod, which has been trying to do it for 4 years now.
Why can't they put them in there?
If your game doesn't have a T-Rex screaming in slow motion, start again.
And sun goes up.
I hope the Raven guys...
While the T-Rex screams. It's morning. It's
I hope the Raven guys are listening to this. Yeah,
it's taking notes. This is
listening to this. This seems to be important too.
Okay, so that's the fun stuff done. We need to talk a little bit about our blog, because
Our blog's plenty fun.
Yeah, so we're trying to build a website, and it's going slowly and difficultly. So what's going on is we've put Tom on the blog full time, and he's going to be working on, so you can get your dose of Tom.
Oh God.
Every day, three or four times a day.
No one's going to come now.
By going to pcgamer.co.uk. What we're trying to do is get to a place where we have a PC Gamer site that is as good as we know we can be, and as good as our readers want us to be. Because I know, like, as editor of the world's number one PC games magazine, it's quite irritating that we don't have a site that we're super proud of. And we're starting a kind of a long process of getting to that point. The first part of that is, you know, let's actually see if people like our writing online, and having one of our best writers online kind of permanently making stuff. Dude, you know it. seems to be like a good way to start. It's not by any means that's all that's going to happen, and we've got plenty of fun stuff going on, but it may be that the site explodes a couple of times as we try and do some stuff to the back end of it to make it a little bit easier for us to work with. So bear with us, but on the good side is, hey, Tom, three times a day.
Oh, good Lord. You're really not selling it to most people.
Hey, I've survived.
Maybe to my mother. Yeah. She's probably thinking, great.
We could do a site just like Tom's mom.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, no. I've already got that site.
Very nice. Can you send me the address later?
I'm leaving.
Cool. The other thing is the top 100 voting is closing on Thursday, which is probably when this podcast is out. So you've probably got about 4 hours to vote in the top 100.
Do it now.
We would like very much like you to email us with your five favourite games and the reasons you voted for them. because we would like to do a feature on all the games voted, and we may have slightly forgotten to ask you for those comments. So, dear God, men, help us out and email us in with your descriptions of why you like your five favourite games, and we may put you in the magazine.
Otherwise, it'll be full of people that join Matrix's favourite game.
Yeah, so particularly if, say, you may have voted for something a little bit niche like Star Control 2, the Urken Masters, which we may struggle to find some comments for. To be honest, if you're going to just write about Half-Life, it's not even worth it. And yeah, we're going to be in Manchester on April the 8th, and if you're a subscriber, you should have got an email the last couple of days saying come meet us in Manchester, which is nice. And that's about it.
Twitter questions?
Twitter questions.
I know it's everyone's favourite bit.
Questions.
Yep.
Yes, we should just do that.
Questions. 20 questions. Let's never do that.
Yeah, let's not call it that.
Okay, I just need to start up my phone. Excuse me.
I've got them here.
Have you? Okay.
Right, hang on. No, I think I turn it at 10 and forget what I'm doing.
I think our new studio might just be an office with a lot of kind of spongy spikes put on the wall. Now that I look around.
I know how much, what the budget was to kind of rebuild this studio. Yeah, all it is an office with some sponge.
Nearly there. All we've got so far is retweets of people retweeting our Ubisoft DRM fail.
Oh no!
We did get.
Yeah, we got some. It's just in the middle of all this.
Okay. We'll have to cut this bit.
Yeah. What important should audio be in games?
This is the kind
Jack
of standard.
Wilkie.
Yes.
Maximum important.
Some importance.
This guy uses Stalker sound design as an example of what important should audio be in
games. Well, yeah, that's exactly what we talked about.
Is exactly what we talked about. Very important, I think. Actually, a lot of people seem to be really impressed with Battlefield Bad Company's audio.
I'm not convinced, actually. I think it sounds really impressive, and I bet it's amazing in kind of super loud 5.1 or 7.1 or the rest of it. However, I just kind of think it's too oppressive, and if you're kind of in a battle, all you get is a constant sound of kind of explosives going off next to you. I
quite like it, but I can see why it'd be off-putting.
Yeah,
I don't like it because it all comes through my left speaker at the moment, and I don't know why.
I would
say, like, what important? About 50% in that game.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Just Cause 2 has a noise for cars flipping through the air.
Yeah. This is for that scene in movies when, you know, a car kind of hits a curb or something and flips sideways as it goes over a ramp. And they play it in slow-mo, so the normal sound that you wouldn't really hear of a car whooshing through the air comes out as a kind of Just Cause 2, they just put that sound in just all the time. Anytime a car kind of tilts in midair, it goes. It's really cool.
So, did you ever play Crackdown on the Xbox?
Yeah.
My favourite thing about that game is you could shoot out the wheels of a car that was going quite fast, and they'd kind of go for a bit, and then suddenly the momentum would kind of hit them, and they just start flipping. Does it have that?
Yeah, you can. In fact, there's an early mission where you're standing on top of a car that you're supposed to be protecting, and all these jeeps are following you. And you can try tying them to the ground, but weirdly, the rope just kind of breaks, and often it doesn't pull them off the road in the spectacular way you might imagine. Or it will just kind of jerk them, and then they'll level out and drive after you. But if you shoot one of their tires off, they just go fucking crazy. They just, like, fly 50 feet into the air and explode. Oh, God, our tire!
Okay, so... Yeah, I see what you mean about the retweets. Okay, so... One thing... Bad Company 2, when did an extensive options menu become a positive selling point? Has it really gotten to that? So these are the video that DICE released for Bad Company, which showed how good it was on PC.
I didn't see that video, but when I fired up Bad Company 2, I was kind of totally not knowing what to expect, whether I was going to like it or hate it. And I clicked settings, and I literally had a little like flutter of joy in my heart to see all the settings are there on one giant page, and I can just click on anything. Just so like satisfying to see that, because everything that's done for console, because they can only handle like 4 or 5 inputs, seemingly, has to be designed into like 9 separate pages, and you must tab through each different thing and go bling 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 bling.
What they didn't do is do a decent server browser.
Yeah.
Which, like,
to be fair,
it
is their first time. Oh, no, wait.
No. So this is the first, second, fifth Battlefield game and Myriad expansion packs. And they still haven't got a server browser.
I found that if you turn off Punkbuster and search options, it'll give you a huge amount more servers, but they're all Punkbuster enabled anyway.
Are you getting kind of random disconnects when you play as
that's,
well?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it was kind of unconnects. I can't connect in the first place.
I've been following it this weekend. Apparently what's happened is they've had 400% more players playing it than they expected.
Well, that's fine. Really great, but... Yeah. That's stopping
paid for a game. Yeah,
they all paid. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like you had 300% of people just came from nowhere.
And it was okay to do it.
It was sold, I assume on the PC, the majority of copies were sold via digital distribution. I would assume at some point there is a number that says A, where all those copies have been sold, B, how many copies have been sold, and C, you know, they might want to go online on the weekend. Yeah. It's just unacceptable.
Also, when Battlefield Bad Company was sold on a smaller player.
Yes.
You know, they didn't really see any videos of a single player.
I love
which
when companies...
Which started World War II as well. Yeah. Like, for an entirely futuristic game, the first level set in some island in Japan.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's always funny when companies just say, oh, we had like a really unexpected level of demand and, you know, loads more people playing than we thought we would. You sell this in a box in shops. Why did you ship that many boxes?
Yeah. I mean, but that's... that. When Blizzard were kind of launching World of Warcraft, they stopped putting copies out there because they didn't have... They couldn't put the servers up to meet the demand. And it just seems, you know, manage that shit and no one will get hurt.
Yeah.
Okay. Portal 2, surprised to see it announced for Half-Life 2 Episode 3.
Not really. Personally.
I just kind of considered that it would have, that Portal 2 was coming fairly shortly. I didn't expect them to be doing something as vast, like, and turning it into a full-fledged.
Yeah, I never really considered that, actually. Didn't occur to me that they would just make it a fully standalone, full-length game. Because I thought the shortness worked so well in Portal, I thought they would build on that. And they talk so much about how they love doing these little modular games, like episodes of Half-Life. Yeah. And particularly since that, you know, doing an episode of Half-Life is apparently not a trivial task. It seems to take them quite a while.
It's also, the co-op campaign is apparently a full campaign as well.
Yeah.
I think at this stage, though, we should probably just expect Episode 3 to just be called Half-Life 3 and just be done with it.
That'd be really disappointing. I mean, as I say, it's Half-Life 3
would
be...
I think Valve's episodic project is pretty much dead now.
Yeah.
I think it's not so much an episodic project as a small project. Just we have made all our games small now. They still come out on the same release schedule, but now they're shorter.
DWM asked, obvious, do you think the reported DDoS against the Ubisoft servers will result in a rethink about online DRM? I hope so from Ubisoft. It's not going to stop other people trying it, though. I think Red Rags were born. Okay. David Ray Bald asks, why is Steam more expensive than box retail software these days? Which is a really good question. It's something that...
I've always assumed... I mean, it's not set by Steam. That's the first thing. And I've always assumed that it's some kind of deal the publishers have to strike where they can't screw over the bricks and mortar stores because... those are the guys with all the power. They actually sell the majority of the copies of any given game, and they won't accept a deal where people can get it cheaper online because it fucks them over.
But no one's selling PC games in bricks and mortar.
No, that's true.
I always get the thing with humans that I'm buying part of the service anyway, and that I can get the patches, I can get the community, I can get the game be available whenever I want. You know, I always just assumed that I'm, you know, kind of paying for the fact that I could download gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes of information whenever I choose.
In some cases you can buy it cheaply from like play.com or something and then enter that code into Steam and have it on Steam.
But also, I mean, you know, Steam does have those crazy sales, you know.
Yeah, I think that
it's to make up for the sales, that's the reason. They just add £10 onto everything else.
I think it's because they work on a much more flexible pricing than they're kind of used to. And, you know, essentially what happens is the same as most consumer electronics things, isn't it? Is that you put it out at as much as you think people are willing to pay, and then just gradually release the prices, reduce the prices. The difference is, I just don't think they get around to reducing the prices.
Well, they always had this thing where they were saying how, you know, they didn't think until they had Steam that you could raise the price again.
Yeah.
Which they do all the time. They drop the price and then they put it back to normal again.
Yeah.
They just don't think people buy it, but they get more people buying it after that when they mess the sales.
People are stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. EGTF asks, what game have you bought and then felt the most guilty about having done so afterwards?
Guilty?
I bought Battlefield 2 about 6 months ago when it was in a Steam sale, and I haven't played it once. I don't feel necessarily guilty, I just feel stupid.
I think it means... Is it suggesting like a bad game or a game that's
maybe
just like... I don't buy crap games.
No guilt?
No guilt. I mean, I've regretted purchases, certainly.
Yeah. I
felt slightly stupid because I bought Osmos and then found we already had a free copy of it. But then I felt good anyway because it's supporting a tiny indie dev and it costs like £3.50 or something. In the list of my regrets in life, it's probably number 586.
I bought a PS2 at university based on the back of a review of a very niche Japanese game that I can't even remember the title of, in which you had played a character who could stretch and kind of pull at elasticated things. And I thought it sounded amazing and spent about £250 on that. And I felt, you know, that based on Edge's review that said it was a system seller. So we never, ever trust Edge. Right, another question. And Tom Mayo asks, where should I work next?
Oh,
God.
Oh, poor Tom.
Tom is works at EA.
He doesn't anymore.
He used to always tweet in with questions about Battleforge and stuff, so we got to talk about that.
Yeah.
So I reckon you should probably... So how is Battleforge? We should ask him.
He no longer cares.
Yeah. He have a space.
It'd be really funny if you tweeted in saying, why is Battleforge so shit? Why have you been talking about this worthless game?
Uppy17 asks, will PCG have some free DRM with the next issue? If so, what time? We might come with an EULA in the forthcoming issue.
Oh, yeah.
You should totally do that.
Also, you find if at any time you're disconnected while reading PC Gamer, it sets a light.
Yeah. Also, all the pages just kind of clamp shut immediately. and any progress you've made through the magazine.
You reset to the last page.
Can't you just do it in invisible ink?
Chaos Smurf asks, why Immortals made of oh so many dicks? That's from Chaos Smurf. Presumably, he's getting the shit beaten out of him in StarCraft 2. Alex Kitney asks, what would a squirrel look like if you were to feed it as much cheese as its body weight in one sitting?
Bigger.
Yeah. Alex Kitney maybe shouldn't be posting this publicly. That Bobsy asks, this is good actually, did you know Bassets have named all the jelly babies?
What? But I eat their heads.
It's
by
true.
Colour or just all of them in the world?
Presumably like every colour has its own name, like the green ones are Jeff.
It would be good if they named everyone.
If you've seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, there's a scene where Jelly Baby's heart is ripped out from his chest. Which is hilarious.
Corwraith asks,
as a gummy bear actually, sorry.
Oh, damn it. So jelly beans, they're all taste the same, I swear.
Brand are you buying here?
You know those Jelly Belly jelly beans?
You can't be saying
really
jelly bellies taste the same.
If you close your eyes, you would not be able to tell any of them.
You know why? You know, because she's been feeding you the same flavour every time.
Yeah, they're all root beer for some reason.
Corwraith asks, do you think the Total War format is getting a little bit old? How many more Total War games can people suffer without getting bored? I think that, actually.
He sounds bored himself.
Yeah, so. In totality.
Why do you think it's getting boring?
I think there's...
War never changes.
Yeah. The weird thing I had when I played one of the Total War games, I can't remember which one it was, it had the same tutorial level as it had from the previous game. And that to me was not a good sign.
There's only so many ways you can paint the globe or the world your colour. And I do think there's... So the best thing Total War ever did, I think, was when they went to Rome, they kind of made where your positions are on the map much more central to thing rather than just kind of the straight regions. They haven't really gone much further than that in how their game works, and it is desperately in need of the kind of campaign overlay that they have needs a complete rethink. And at some point the aim for them, I think, should be being able to zoom, as in Supreme Commander, go from the very top of your empire and zoom right into the very kind of countryside, and that being the campaign map. I just think we've had so many of the, you know, Rome, Medieval, Empire and Napoleon now are still using what is essentially the same mechanics and ideas in their campaign map.
Elemental War of Magic has a smooth zoom from like a top level world strategic view to
that's the Stardock strategy.
Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it actually. The more I read about it, the more I think, awesome.
I think as well, you know, they, no matter how many times they put their kind of new IP out there, it just seems like the only story left for people to kind of think about is the period it is. And the naval combat wasn't brilliant fun. It was very accurate and kind of very smart, but they had to completely redo it so it became fun. I don't know where that can go, to be honest. It's a struggle for them. Right, next question. My question says, Stegzilla, where do you get your front covers from? Well, actually, it's an interesting story. No, they supply art, and then we put the words on it.
Okay, that was a shorter story than I was expecting. Yeah.
Hungry Pirate asks, what two or more games would you like combined, such as Hitman and GTA, or Just Cause and Oblivion?
Hitman and GTA is the one I usually say, actually.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'd like StarCraft and StarCraft Ghost, please.
I'd like Nabracula Drop and Tag.
That's a good one.
Just Cause and Deus Ex. I'll think about it later.
Command and Conquer and Half-Life.
Yeah, but that was rubbish.
You don't seem convinced by that thought, Graham.
No, I don't really have anything that I'd particularly enjoy being convinced.
But that was what Hellgate was based on. Hellgate was Half-Life and Diablo. Let's make a game as good as Half-Life shooter. Let's make a game as good as Diablo as a thingy. And it was I would play that game forever and never could be seen again. But it just fucked up. But yeah, Borderlands. It's kind of close, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is anyone still playing Borderlands?
Well, I always wanted to play Court, but no one really seems to.
I'll play with you. My PC's a bit better for
it. It's a bit tough because the level difference is, isn't it? You get invested in a character and it's like level 22 and someone else is either 36 or 4.
Jim was saying how good the new DLC is it. The new DLC for it is, in that you're kind of driving over the tops of like really cool highways and there's like zombie encampments underneath, which sounds fun. Neothermic asks, bacon or toast for the ultimate I'm going to finish this game in one sitting snack?
Bacon. Bacon or anything, there's no, you can't ask bacon or, just bacon. I like bacon.
I have tea and a cheese sandwich.
Graham?
I go with bacon as well. Bacon beats all.
Bacon takes a long time to prepare, and if you're desperate for a game to start.
Just eat it raw.
You can tell where you're from, it's Graham.
You can get like a dry, crispy bacon from Marks and Spencer's. So it's like being pre-cooked and it's really, really crispy. Oh, it's so good.
So wrong.
Has the podcast been spayed? Asks Insane. Any word on more world and conflict?
Well, right now, the microphones on this table are arranged in a kind of like four legs and a tail type arrangement. So as long as that's the tail, it may have been spayed.
Yes.
There's a big hole in the middle as well, so yeah.
Yeah. Do we know what the podcast sex is? Presumably if it's been spayed, then it's a lady, but...
I think it's just been decided for us.
Yeah. For fuck's sake, you can't just decide a sex. Dante MVH asks, what is your favourite SOCOM strategy? Mine is mass artillery bombardment with the UEF.
If Rich were here, he would agree.
Yeah, it's pretty much mine as well, although sometimes the unit cannon with the UEF.
Mine is cyber megaliths with massed Cybran adapters, which are the little mobile shield things that are also anti-air and also intercept tactical missiles. And the megaliths are—they're only a minor experimental, and the major experimental is the dinosaur. But the megaliths have like 10 times the range, and they're also like less than half the price. So if you just mass those, they're actually more effective than giant stompy dinosaur. And also, like when they're covered in shields, there's nothing anyone can do against them.
Nice.
I have no favourite.
I'm actually a fan of the nuclear option, because there appears to be, if you just go pure nuclear,
you will win. Yeah,
you're also going to just ruin the game, because then everyone else either has to go pure nuclear and do it slightly faster than you, or they have to go nuclear defense and then click that button every time you click your button, and it just goes on and on indefinitely.
But if you go nuclear, you can't, you basically leave yourself open to massive ground attack early on. So yeah, go nuclear. And I'll
that seems like a drawback somehow.
Yeah, and I think that's about it from Twitter.
Cool.
So I think we may well be done here. Yeah. So thank you very much for coming, guys.
No problem.
And thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very shortly with another podcast.
Hooray!
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.